God walks exactly the way He wants us to walk, so we know how to follow. Bill said this morning in Sunday school that I was going to preach, and I preached from strange ways. I told Judy about 2 weeks ago that I had no idea what I was going to preach. And one day I was sitting in the chair and she turned on the TV and there was a Bill Gaither thing on, and I guess it was the Hoppers who were doing old songs to honor older groups. And one of the songs they were playing, one of the songs they sang, was this song, God Walks the Dark Hills. And I sat there and listened to it, and out of the song, God went click, 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 click. So what you hear this morning came in a strange way through this strange brain to bring about what He wants to say to us today. We took the offering early, according to Peggy, so I would make certain I got paid. Isn't that truth, Tom? Didn't she make that statement? Mark chapter 9. I really had Tom take the offering early, because when I get through preaching, I'm just going to dismiss you. Nothing else after I'm through. I don't want you to leave like you normally leave. I want you to just leave. Not now. I just want you to leave without talking, without trying to figure out who's going to win the next ball game, or even what the weather's going to be, or anything else. I just want you to leave. I don't want Satan to be able to steal from your mind what he's going to say to you today. Okay? In Mark chapter 9, Jesus chose to take 3 of the 12 apostles upon a mountain. Let me read beginning in verse 2. 6 days later, Jesus took with him Peter, James, and John and brought them up to a high mountain by themselves, and he was transfigured before them. And his garments became radiant and exceedingly white, as no launderer on earth can whiten them. If you read this account in Luke, Luke says that his face shined like the sun. So get the picture. And do your best to put yourself there. Jesus chose these 3. I do not know why. He chose these 3 to go on the mountain. Peter, James, and John. And also in Luke's account, I think Luke, might be Matthew, one of those 2 accounts says that when they were there, Jesus was praying, and these 3 became drowsy and probably dozed off to sleep. And when they awoke, they saw the transfiguration of Jesus. be one of them, can you? You're just a normal human being, and Jesus takes you up on a mountain and is transfigured in front of you. His face lights up like the sun. His clothes are whiter than any launderer on earth can make them. What do you think? Are you scared? They were. And then in the midst of looking at him, there appears with Jesus Moses and Elijah. As far as I can read in any of these passages of Scripture, Jesus never introduced Peter, James, and John to Moses and Elijah. They just knew who they were. And they had been dead for years. As far as I can tell in any of these accounts, James and John said nothing. They were totally silent. Peter, of course, who is used to talking all the time, couldn't help it. When he saw Moses and Elijah and Jesus talking, and by the way, they were talking with Jesus about his departing from Jerusalem when he ascended back to heaven. How did Moses and Elijah know that already? I don't know the answer to that either. But Peter blurted out, "Lord, it's good for us to be here. Let us build three tents, three tabernacles, three booths. Let us build a place for you to get out of the sun and for Moses and Elijah to get out of the sun." I don't know what he was thinking. Maybe he was thinking, Moses and Elijah may not be able to take the sun any longer. Let's build a booth. He didn't know what he was saying. And in the midst of his talk, a cloud overshadowed them and came right in the middle of where they were. And a voice out of that cloud, which was the voice of God, said, "This is my beloved Son, hear him." If I had been God, I would have probably said, "Shut up, Peter, and listen to what Jesus has to say." Why did he choose those three? Why not the others? Do you think after this experience that these three were more spiritual than they were before? Now, by the way, you can talk to me anytime. Were they more spiritual after this experience than they had been before? No, they weren't. Isn't that strange? What would it do for you to hear the verbal voice of God? You know how we would say, "This is my Son." I'm not certain God talks like that, but if you heard his voice verbal, I bet you haven't. Have you? You. Me either. I bet if you heard his voice verbally, it would at least do something to you, wouldn't it? These guys don't seem to be any more spiritual after that. You know how television programs are? Meanwhile, back at the ranch. Meanwhile, back in the valley are the other nine apostles. Why did he leave them down there? I don't know. Look at verse 14. Verse 14 says, "And when they came back to the disciples, they saw a large crowd around them, and some scribes arguing with them. And immediately when the entire crowd saw him, they were amazed and began running up to greet him. And he asked them, What are you discussing with them? One of the crowd answered him, Teacher, I brought you my son, possessed with a spirit which makes him mute. And whenever it seizes him, it dashes him to the ground, and he foams at the mouth and grinds his teeth and stiffens out. And I told your disciples to cast it out, and they could not. Here's the other 9 apostles. While Peter, James, and John are on the mountain in the midst of a cloud that has the voice of God speaking out of it, and Moses and Elijah being there, Andrew, Simon, Judas, and the others were in the valley in a confrontation with a demon that has inflicted a young boy who oftentimes throws him into the water and throws him into the fire in order to destroy him. And the dad asked these apostles, who, by the way, 2 chapters earlier, Jesus had given them authority over demons, and they had been going out through Galilee casting demons out of people and preaching the gospel. But when they came to this one with Jesus on the mountain, they are confronted with one that they can't handle. I don't know how they tried to cast him out. I don't know if they did some incantation. I don't know what they did. But whatever they tried, it didn't work. And when Jesus came back down the, or when Jesus came down the mountain and found out what was going on, he cast the demon out, and I'm not going to read it because I assume you know the story. He cast the demon out, and you remember that the boy fell like he was dead, and people started saying, he's dead, he's dead, he's dead, and Jesus took him by the hand and lifted him up, and he walked on. Which place would you have rather been? Would you have rather been on the mountain watching Jesus be transfigured, hearing the voice of God, or in the valley dealing with the demon? Where would you rather been? Gary, you, I know you probably would rather been dealing with the demon. But it's okay. Right. Okay. That's the introduction. They leave. And on the way, they went through Galilee. Jesus taught the disciples that he was going to suffer and die and rise again the third day. And they didn't understand a thing he said. Verse 33. And when they came to Capernaum, when he was in the house, he began to question them. That question in the Greek tense says he questioned them more than once. He said to them, what were you guys arguing about on the way here? You see, Jesus was walking on before them, and they, as oftentimes, were trailing along behind. And Jesus asked them, what were you guys talking about? What were you guys arguing about on the way? Because while he was ahead and could not hear what they were saying, he could tell they were arguing. So he asked them, what were you arguing about? They didn't answer him. Can you imagine not answering Jesus? He said to them again, what were you guys arguing about? No, not my brave enough to tell him. So he asked him again, what were you arguing about on the way? And they never answered his question. Never. They kept silent, verse 34 says, because on the way they had discussed with one another which of them was the greatest. What a dumb argument. These are men, 12 of them, that God has chosen to pour His life in so that they could carry on the ministry when He was gone, so that they could share truth of the gospel, so that you and I, centuries later, could hear the truth from Jesus and be born again, which has happened. But at this point, they are arguing about who's going to be the greatest. Why were they arguing that? Because of a misconceived idea that they had in their brain, that Jesus is going to set up a kingdom on this earth, and we're going to rule and reign with Him, and the world's going to know who we are. And so they were arguing about which one of them was going to have a position of being the greatest of all the others. Somehow, I don't know this for truth, so don't take this as gospel. Somehow I think this argument came about because of Simon Peter. I might be wrong, but Simon Peter was on the mountain, and Simon Peter had seen Jesus transfigured in a glorified state, and he's still human. He heard the voice of God from heaven verbally say, "This is my son." He saw with his very human eyes Elijah and Moses, and these other nine who had been in the valley never saw that. That must mean these three have a relationship with Jesus that they don't have. That must mean these three have a standing with Jesus and an influence with Him that these other guys don't have. At least that's what I think. So I can imagine this argument of who's the greatest comes because they think they've been elevated. Maybe it wasn't, and it doesn't really matter. So I'll go on. Verse 35, "And sitting down, He called the 12 and said to them, 'If anyone wants to be first, he shall be last of all, and servant of all.'" That's different. That's different than you think. That's different than I think. Gary said yesterday, Muhammad said he was the greatest. And he did. That's a different philosophy than I grew up with. I bet it's a different philosophy than you grew up with. That's an interesting philosophy, so much so that I want to read you the definition of the Greek word servant. Let me read it to you. The word that's translated servant of all means to wait on others and care for their needs. To place the needs and comfort of someone else above our own in active service. Yeah? Jesus said to them, if you want to be great, be a servant. That must be two different kingdoms He's talking about. If you want to be great, be last and become a servant of all. Do you think they got that message? You think they got it? You can answer me now. You think they got that message? Apparently didn't, because one chapter away, in chapter 10, if you'll turn there, and look at verse 35. Not over a week. "And James and John, the two sons of Zebedee, came up to Him, saying to Him, 'Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask of you.' He said to them, 'What do you want me to do?' They said, grant that we may sit in your glory, one on your right and one on your left. Jesus said to them, you don't know what you're asking. You're going to drink the cup I drink of. You're going to be baptized with the baptism I am. But to sit on my right, verse 40, or on my left, is not mine to give. But it is for those to whom it has been prepared. Look at verse 41. And hearing this, the ten began to feel indignant with James and John. James and John, this is two of the three that was on the mountain. This is two of the three that saw Jesus transfigured. This is two of the three that met Moses and Elijah. This is two of the three that heard the literal voice of God. Are they more spiritual now than they were before they went up? I don't think so. Because now all of a sudden they want to be great after hearing the message of Jesus in Capernaum, that if they want to be great, be servant of all, they now want to be Lord of all, who sits right next to Jesus in his kingdom. And the other ten, well, they didn't like that. They became indignant with him. And look what Jesus did. He called the ten to himself and said to them, you understand that those who are recognized as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and the great men exercise authority over them. But it is not so with you. You have a different mindset than that. You think different than that. You are my disciples. You are my followers. And I walk every dark hill so you'll know how to get through that dark hill. I walk through every valley so you'll know how to get through the valley. So all the principles and all the priorities and all the attitudes that I have as you follow through those roads should be involved in your life. It's not like that with you. Yes, it's like that with the world, but it is not like that with you. Is this loud enough? Gary? Can you... These two are two of the 12 that have just heard the message of Jesus that if you want to be great, be my servant. Be servant of all. And so he gives them the message again in verse 44. And whoever wishes to be first among you, verse 43, let me go back. But it is not so among you, but whoever wishes to become great among you shall be your servant. And whoever wishes to be first among you shall be slave of all. It's almost the same word, just a little bit deeper. So he said to them in essence, listen to the message again. Do you think they got it this time? Do you think after two times in less than a week, he pulls these 12 aside and says to them, you want to be great? Be servant. You want to be great? Be servant. He's teaching them that, Tom, as they follow him down the dark hills. Did they get it? You think they got it? Did you? That hurts. You see, it's easy for me to criticize them because they didn't get the message that Jesus told them straight out. But it's harder to look in the mirror and say, did you get it? Okay. I'm almost through. I want you to think. Will you just think? If you chose to have the same attitude Jesus has, instead of the attitude of the world that you've always had, what difference do you think it'd make in your life? You want me to ask that again? If you chose to understand His revealed truth, if you chose to have the attitude that Jesus has, maybe I should read it. Verse 45 says, "For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give His life a ransom for many." The one who came not to be served, but to serve, walks the dark hills in front of you so you'll know how to walk in His footsteps. If you chose to follow His attitude, His way of thinking instead of the world's way of thinking, if you put that into practice in your life, in your home, what difference do you think that would make in your home? I took the liberty last Sunday to ask Susan to give some thought to what difference it would make in a Christian's home if both of them chose to take this attitude of serving the other one. I don't know what she's going to say. But I ask her to pray and give some thought about what might change in homes if both of them chose to take the attitude of Jesus and serve one another.
It's been an interesting week because I've done that. I've prayed and I've thought about it, and I've been convicted by it, because I think a lot of times we kind of have a unique situation at our house because my son and his wife live with us and my mother-in-law lives with me. So we have a mother, a mother-in-law, and a daughter-in-law. And I try so hard to have that servant attitude, but the more I prayed about it, the more I realized I'm doing it out of obligation, which is not the right attitude. And I think if we truly had that servant attitude that Christ is talking about, my focus wouldn't be on me or the situation, but on how can I be more Christ-like towards my family members. And that's convicting, because I try so hard to be that servant, but I think I try to do it in my own strength instead of allowing Christ to serve through me. And I don't think we truly understand what servanthood means and how setting aside our wants and desires to meet the wants and desires of others could truly transform our homes and our churches. You know, if we came to church with that passion to serve others, I think we would be bursting at the seams, because people would want to know what's going on there. You know, and I even went back and read some about the early church and how, you know, they did everything in common and they were all meeting each other's needs. And there were still problems, you know, Priscilla and Aquila lied, and, you know, it wasn't perfect. But they communed together as a group, meeting each other's needs because of that servanthood. And I think if we really could get a hold of what that means, it would cause a revival in our land. In ways we don't even understand.
Did you notice this week that when you were trying to just think through this, did you notice how often the devil pushed hot spots in your life?
Yes.
The only reason I know to ask that question is ever since that time when I heard God walks the dark hill and God started twisting this strange brain of mine, the devil has been pushing spots in my life all week long. That happens on the road. That happens in things going wrong. That happens in anything I wanted to do. Something else I had to do. Being a servant, here, she just said, being a servant can't be functioned out in the flesh. Flesh don't go there.
You can maintain for a little while.
Right.
But not for the long haul.
But a button will get pushed, and all of a sudden it won't be worth doing any longer. I want you to just think you and your spouse for a minute. Will you? I know I'm bad. I want you just to think you and your spouse in your home. What would happen if the attitude of Christ was your attitude to serve your spouse? Does that mean you would just do everything and they wouldn't do anything? That's not the servanthood of Jesus. Jesus always did for every person he was serving what was best for that individual. That didn't mean he was a rug to be walked on. That didn't mean all the other stuff that we envision. It is my belief that if in your two, since you're paired off now, you're not thinking about me and Judy. You're just thinking about you too. It is my belief that if both of you chose to follow the illustration that Jesus gave, it would eliminate 95% of every argument you deal with. I believe it would eliminate 98% of every critical spirit you have toward your spouse. And if it is not being eliminated, how bold do I get? It is because you are living after the things of the flesh and not following His illustration. Jesus said, you want to be great? Who doesn't? Who doesn't? You want to be great with Him or the world? Hopefully you want to be great with Him. Being great with Him demands that I become servant of all. What would it do with your children? What would it be like on your job? Remember, I told you I want you to just think. What would it be like with your relationships with friends? If your heart's attitude and priority was to serve instead of being served. Okay, I want to give you three statements. Three pointers that will help you be able to, because you cannot in yourself, help you to be able to develop the attitude that Jesus had to be servant of all. I want you to listen, and then we're going to leave. How in the world can I make the choice to be servant of all? I think number one, you have to fall in love with Jesus. That's simple. I think you have to fall in love with Jesus. Let me clarify love just a little. Because love isn't an emotion. It is physically, it is humanly. But that's not the area we're in. We're in the other area. We're in the spiritual area. And in the spiritual realm of your life, love is a commitment. It may develop an emotional issue with man and wife, but it is a commitment to Him. Fall in love with Jesus. Number two. Walk your way over and over and over through Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Not just to hear the stories, and not just to get involved in the stories, but I want you to get involved in looking at Jesus. Look at His characteristics. Look at what He does. Look at how He does them. Look at why He does them. And only then can those characteristics and truths be implanted in you and in your mind. And number three, ask the Holy Spirit over and over to assist you in arriving at the attitude that Jesus has. You want to be great? Be servant of all. You want to be great in whose eyes? If He's Lord, you want to be you want Him to be pleased with you. So if you want to catch a glimpse of His approval at your life, ask the Holy Spirit to give you direction and guidance as you wade through the Gospels until He saturates your life and your mind with His principles, His desires, His motives, His ambitions, the things that caused Him to tick. I don't mean to be assuming on Him. And allow the Spirit of God to take what motivated Jesus and what caused Him to be who He was humanly to be implanted in your life and in your mind. Okay, you're dismissed. You can, if you need to talk with someone, if you even need to come to the altar, you can come. Bring someone with you. Other than that, if you want to talk to someone about helping me get to that point, that's fine. Otherwise, let's just go, okay?